Well, you can use those chairs as well. Just across me. Anyone who wants to sit there. I will start with the housekeeping matters. Apologies from our side. We have got an apology from Honorable Van der Waarden. Honorable Youngblood and Honorable Velma. They have apologized. Honorable Nyamiboyi, Zeb Skopa. Those are the three apologies that we have received. Okay, and also Honorable both ministers, DPSA and DPME, have apologized for attending cabinet sitting. Over to you.
Madam Chair, can we please apologize on behalf of the Acting Director General? She's also in cabinet this morning. And I think the Deputy Minister is joining us in the meeting.
Mr.
Joseph.
Morning, Chair. Morning, Honourable Members. The DM is still tablet, but she will be joining us. Although we get the apologies in, but she will. Thank you.
We'll see her when we see her.
When you see her. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. So, I take those apologies. Is that an apology?
Still an apology, Chair. I think from National Treasury we have sent a written apology. I hope the committee have received it well in advance. So we apologize for the minister for being in cabinet. Deputy minister is attending some African Union matter. And the director general is at Scopa. So today the three of us will be representing Treasury.
Okay, now your apologies accepted, and I've just cross-checked with the Umar Kole. He confessed, but he deliberately did not want to say it. next time he was also copied to whoever is the acting chair or the chair. No, on a lighter note, but that's the right procedure. Other than that, those are the apologies, honorable members and colleagues, and I assume we accept the apologies, in particular those ones who have been formalized.
Just check for that sake. I hope you're aware that the young lady is actually very good. Yes, she's not well, so that's the reason.
I do understand her status, but I was not aware that she's getting worse. So we'll pray for her.
I believe she's getting better. So.
Okay, now that would be good. Okay. Thank you. And you're welcome, Mr. Biela.
Thank you.
We are today, honorable members, as one of our outstanding matter that we request the threesome, which is Treasury, DPSA, and CETA, to update us on the integrated financial management system. But also, before I also say the other issues that we are more interested on, Ms. Sundusa, what will request moving forward, and thanks for continuously since you join us attending our meetings, whatever issues that we raise as questions to the departments and issues that will be also need other departments to respond to, before they come, before the committee must call, we must ensure that we update, we appraise Ms. Sundusa so that she's aware, so that the departments also, if it's Treasury, is also aware on issues that we would like them to focus on, so that we don't also end up overstepping our oversight at this portfolio committee, but we must concentrate on what is within our space in terms of the oversight, as it were. Because from CETA, I had a discussion over the phone with Ms. Portia yesterday morning. She was not quite aware that in terms of the specification, notwithstanding that last year, was it last year when we had an engagement with them? Yes, last year. But I think for KTC reasons also, so that all of us were in the same page of understanding what is expected as a progress report, as it were, it will have that we just iron up that part of us administratively. It will assist. And also for Treasury, equally goes for them, because they, I don't want to say they freelance attending here, or they change their faces as they change which we really don't appreciate, because when we speak to one department, regardless of the new face that comes in, we expect that the other colleagues would have briefed them. But moving forward, I think that should be in the culture that all of us, we take care of. But just to recap, colleagues and honorable members, what we are more interested in is the progress with clear milestones on the upgrading the IT system or the parcel system as it were. We are aware that Treasury is the project leader, the the CETA is more of a service provider as it were technically, and the DPSA is the policy owner. One, our area of concern is that PASAL is outdated. Hence, it does make errors, serious financial errors. One, when you upload HR-related matters, it does duplicate or ignore. Hence, we, from where we are seated, we believe that probably even the ghost, alleged ghost public servants, the number could be also be minimized. We don't take the issue that DPSA, last time when you came before us, you said you are going internally to do the headcount. You can't do that one. And I hope this time around you are not going to tell us that. But also in terms of the HR management, we believe that it should assist the senior management in terms of monitoring performance of the departments in terms of meeting their predetermined objectives as per their KPIs. But also the other area that we are concerned about, how much have we spent thus far? What value add in what we have spent? I will request the other honorable members to recap. I'll start with Honorable Dombela. Right to Honorable Dove. Honorable Dove.
Thank you, Chairperson. And good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Chairperson, I would say what is of main concern for me at the moment is the, I don't know whether to call it suspension or kept the, what do you call it, the freezing of the first phase, you know, of the first phase of the IFMS. I don't know whether to call it that, but my concern is that a lot of money has been spent on it. Obviously, besides the financial implications, it has very serious implications on the modernization of our system as our systems as government. And one is wanting to know what exactly happened. I'm saying that on the basis of the engagement that we had with Treasury about a year ago. And I must, Chairperson, register my very serious concern that since the last encounter between ourselves and Treasury and DPSA, of course, there are questions which were fielded and we were expecting answers, but we never got answers until today. It is very, very unfortunate. And today, mainly the presentation will be about the implementation of the first phase. So I do not know what happened to our questions, Chair, and that is of serious concern to me, because we wanted to know why have we spent so much as government for something that did not work out for us. why was this endeavor to modernize our systems as government given to an American company, and what are the implications in terms of our objectives as the government in terms of job creation. All those, we pose such questions, and we want answers. We wanted answers from Treasury, and those questions never came. Those questions were never answered. It is just unfortunate that the DG of Treasury is not here, and some of the people that were making presentations on behalf of CETA, maybe that Dr. Mhapi is here, but his colleagues are not here. And we had questions that we were supposed to direct straight to them, because there are very, very serious matters that needed to be considered as far as this phase one thing is concerned. So, Chairperson, I'd request your indulgence that we come back to the questions that we want to pose once the presentation has been done. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable Khosa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning, everyone. Chairperson, I don't have much challenges to changes, but one would want to look back as to really with the new innovations, what is it that we are benefiting as department compared to the last system that we have been using all the time. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Very quickly, you and the other colleagues have covered the issues. But I think, colleagues, from our side, the real issue, especially with regard to personnel, especially the personnel system, and CETA, really is the key in this. You've had your own problems. We would like to know, is CETA really up to scratch now to do the things that CETA is supposed to do, to be able to keep a proper record of people who are in the system and people who are out? That's the key, because that's where money is frittered and lost. It's really, from our perspective, do we have the systems that work? Do we have the people who use those systems competent enough to be able to do what they're supposed to do? And if you can satisfy us on that level, we can take up the other issues. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. We opted to take that approach so that we can also deal with the issue that concerns this committee. But we are not suggesting that. We have gone through your presentation, and whatever approach that you intended to take when you're taking us through, do that, but in between also fill up the gaps that we are raising. And I'm sure as the first presenter, I'm not too sure whether it's your good self, Ms. Portia, or Treasury, or DPSA will lead, do tend to answer why you never submitted the questions as promised, which you generally, we set up ourselves for 5 working days with an agreement with the department. Before you, I allow you to take over. 1 second. I'm sorry about that. I was reading a love letter. I'm sorry. I thought it's got something to do with what I wanted to say. That we will expect DPSA to help us on that space to respond to that one, because it will be probably my doctor from CETA. He will be able to respond to some questions that we also raise pertaining your space, as it were. With that, over to you. Oh, the first one before that also is that we have agreed that Masha is not here now. But from DPSA, that next time, kindly ensure that departments and entities that come before us, they don't produce hard copies for this committee. The reason is that if we have received them electronically, we have agreed 2 and a half years back as this committee that no hard copies unless there's a specific request, but which is very rare. But we'll use the hard copies. We really appreciate the colorful hard copies. You'll take us through that. Over to you. Thank you. You are mostly welcome, DM. Thanks. We did receive your notice that you will be joining us very soon. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. Thank you very much for the opportunity. And thank you very much for those initial comments. I think it will assist us in our presentation as well. So I'm sure my colleagues in their presentation will consider those points, and as and when appropriate, we'll try and infuse the presentation with those comments and addressing them. But at the outset, I want to apologize, Madam Chair. It seems like those questions somewhere along the line between ourselves, we didn't finalize it. We will assure you, together with the previous questions that they asked, as well as these new questions, we will address them and respond in writing where appropriate back to the committee going forward. Chair, in terms of the presentation for this morning, we've broken up into three parts. The first part of the presentation is going to be dealt with by DPSA, taking us through the background, where we started off and where we are at the moment, ending with the piloting that we intend starting very soon in June. The second part of the presentation, in terms of the approach, the status, the governance, the funding model, and the dependencies, will be done by National Treasury as the sponsors of the project and also policy owners in certain areas. And then the final part, and I think those are some of the key questions you raised around CETA's readiness in terms of implementation of the project. So those are the three parts and the three approaches we've taken. So can I firstly hand over to Cornell, who will take us through the introduction up to the piloting phase. Cornell?
Yes, Mr. Governor. Over to you, Mr. Cornell.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and members and colleagues. Chair, if I can start on slide 3. I assume we are not going to project anything, so
no.
We are working on the paper copies. Okay, we'll do. We'll do, Chair. Chair, on this is slide 3, and I think what is important here is the point that we make in the introduction that, well, there's two important things. It is the three stakeholders that everybody knows, it's DPSA, Treasury, and CETA that's driving this program. And the scope of the IFMS is currently limited to the public service, and that's the public service as defined in the Public Service Act. So it does not include local government or public entities or the provincial legislators or parliament at this point in time. There has been talk of extending it to local government, and I think that might be a future phase of the IFMS. But for now, it's limited to national and provincial departments. Furthermore, the various domains or the functional areas that are being covered by the IFMS is financial management, HR management, payroll, supply chain, and business intelligence. And I'll speak a bit more about that later. Chair, if we can go to slide 4. These are some of the reasons why the program was initiated. And I think, first of all, it's important to note, and maybe I should have said it in my first slide, although people see it as an IT project, there's obviously an IT element to it, but it's mostly a business renewal, business improvement initiative. So we want to use the IFMS to also facilitate improvement in the way that we run our human resources, how we do supply chain, financial management, and so forth. A second important point is, as part of the implementation of the system, we are going to try and keep the system as much as it is as we bought it. So we don't want to customize it and build new things for the public service. This is a system that is largely standard, and we want to use it in a standardized format for departments. As a result of that, it will mean that as far as possible, we will have to standardize our business process across departments. At the moment, there are in some areas, departments do things in different ways. For example, though we've got a performance management system that's largely uniform, there are subtle differences between departments. They call jobs different, there's different job titles. In some cases, the grades of jobs differ. So through the introduction of the IFMS, we would like to standardize that as far as possible, so as to facilitate the implementation of the system. Secondly, we would also like, where possible, to automate processes, to move away from paper use. A typical example is leave management, so we want to get rid of those packs and packs of, and I think it's called the Z1 that is currently used. So So the intention is that people will apply on the system for their leave, it will be approved on the system, and it will be captured on the system automatically, which means that leave forms can't get lost. Another good example in the HR space is e-recruitment, where people from inside or outside the public service will be able to apply for jobs in the public service on the system, no longer need to make copies of CVs and qualifications, post that, so if they have access to the internet, they should be able to apply for jobs. And in a number of other areas, the same will apply. Where possible, we would like to get away from the use of paper. Chair, I think the third point is very important, and based on the issues that has been raised before in the introduction to this meeting, we want to make sure that in the introduction of the system, we improve the quality of our data. There has been serious questions in the past, and it's been raised around PERSOL. How many public servants are there? And whenever you ask somebody, you get slightly different answers. We know it's around 1.4 million people, but it changes all the time. Hopefully through the checks and balances that's inherent in a system like this, we should be have a more clearer view on a day-to-day basis of how many people are employed. Just on the Northwest issue, and it's not directly related to the IFMS, as you know, a year or two ago there was that big blow up in the media about, and I think it was around 60 or 100,000 ghost workers in Northwest. When it was investigated, it proved it wasn't ghost workers, but it was people that were incorrectly classified on PERSOL. So through better data management, we should be able to get rid of those sort of allegations and making sure that there's a clear view of which category of public servants we are talking about when this comes, there's reports and issues around that. The fourth point is largely related to what I said in terms of automation. We want to enable public servants to engage with the system as far as possible so that they can apply for leave or for jobs, that they can see their pay slips on the system, they can see their leave balances. So it will eliminate the need for phoning your HR component. You can just log on and get a whole range of information pertinent to yourself. You can possibly also change some of your data, the less sensitive things like your telephone number. People will be allowed to change that themselves on the system. The fifth point, I think it's again important, we are using, and as has been alluded by the Honourable Member Ntombela, an American system. It's a system that's used across the world by various public services, both in the West and in Africa and in Eastern European countries, Asia. It's a widely used system, and that system is improved all the time through inputs of the various users. And we believe through that we will be able to get a better, or we can improve the way we run our resources and our systems as well. Then from a technology side, we all know that PERSOL, VAS, LOGOS are very old. Some of them are probably close to 30 years old now. PERSOL, the development started in 1987-88. It is becoming increasingly difficult to maintain these systems, so we have to replace them with more modern technology. And the cost of keeping our old systems going is also increasing. So it is important to renew that. Chair, if we go to slide 5, this is just a very high-level indication of the roles and responsibility of the three main parties involved in the IFMS. Treasury is regarded as the program sponsor, meaning that they are paying for this at this stage. They're also the policy owners for financial management, which includes elements of payroll, excuse me, especially the payment part of it, supply chain management, accounting standards. In future, there will be a much bigger focus on the management of data, and Treasury will obviously take responsibility for the management of the data in their areas. And then Treasury is still also responsible for the management of the current transverse systems, the transversal systems, which is PERSOL, VAS, LOGOS, Vulindlela. And Treasury will maintain these systems until they are replaced by the IFMS. On DPSA side, we are responsible for the for human resource management policy around that, also elements of payroll, and we will in future take increasing ownership of HR data. CITA is focusing mostly on the technical side of it. The hosting of the solution will be done by CITA, and the technical maintenance and support of it, and then also providing technical advisory services during the implementation and development of the system. Chair, if we look at slides 6, 7 and 8, this is giving a very high level and broad historical overview of the program. And I must apologize, I think some members have seen these slides before, but I thought it is important there might be new members. It seems at times there's also a bit of a confusion between IFMS 1 and IFMS 2. I will try to explain that in these slides. So if one look at slide 6, I think the first important date was 2005. That's when Cabinet approved the IFMS. And that was what we term IFMS 1. Now, IFMS 1...
2005?
Yes, Chair, that third block.
2018.
It's 13 years later, yes.
Oh,
cool. not good, but you're right. It is, I know. But Chair, what I think is important in terms of that date and the Cabinet decision, that was IFMS 1, and IFMS 1 was essentially a system that we term it a hybrid system. It meant that it consisted of commercial off-the-shelf systems, meaning systems that are bought from industry, and there were specifically two or three of those, HR management, procurement management, and I think catalog management. But the rest of the IFMS, the intention was that it would be developed in-house by government. Also importantly, and that's the last point under 2005, at that stage, Cabinet placed a moratorium on the acquisition of systems similar to the IFMS by departments. Now, I do assume that the committee might have been approached by departments complaining about the fact that IFMS is taking so long and they are not allowed to buy or build their own systems. That moratorium was put in place to prevent, you know, expenditure on systems that will eventually be replaced by the IFMS. There is currently a process where departments can approach National Treasury, and if there's good reason, a deviation can be granted to them. But a department can't just on their own go and buy a procurement system or an HR system. So after 2005, the process started of either acquiring these systems through tender processes, the ones that were identified as commercial off the shelf, or to develop the systems. I think I need to go to, and this continued in 2010, we started with the implementation of asset management in Limpopo. HR management was at that stage then already procured from industry. It was implemented in DPSA as the first lead site. In 2011, the procurement management and catalog management systems were implemented in National Treasury as lead sites or pilot sites. In 2012, the development of other elements of supply chain management, specifically inventory management, started. There was a start made to develop a business intelligence system that would have replaced Pulindela, our current BI system. 2013, the development of the financial management module started. But in 2013, I think that was an important milestone in the history of the IFMS. And at that point, there was a realization that things are moving way too slowly, that there were serious challenges encountered along the way. Some of it was, I think the complexity of developing these in-house systems was much more complex than was originally envisaged. So that took a long, long time. It became increasingly difficult to integrate these systems with each other, because the intention is to have an integrated solution. And as a result, Treasury decided to commission a number of external or objective reviews of the program. The one was done by the World Bank, one was done by Ernst & Young, and there was a review, and I think it was commissioned by CETA, by Gartner, to look into the IFMS to determine why things, you know, why the challenges, what can be done about it. And all three of these reviews came essentially to the same conclusion, and that was that our approach or our model was wrong. And they recommended that we move away from this hybrid approach where you have bespoke as well as commercial off-the-shelf systems, and that we procure only a commercial off-the-shelf system. They made some other recommendations as well. For example, there was a recommendation that we needed to implement a program management office with dedicated capacity to run the program, and that process has started in National Treasury. Chair, if we move to the next slide, in 2013 we then went to Cabinet with these recommendations. That was obviously after it went through all the various IFMS governance arrangements. And Cabinet approved the change. So it approved the change from IFMS 1 to IFMS 2. And as a result, we then went into a tender process. And the outcome of the tender process was that we decided on procuring an Oracle solution, a single Oracle solution that will span all these areas: HR, finance, supply chain, business intelligence. In the meantime, there was also the PMO, as I mentioned, was established in the National Treasury. In 2016, the agreement, and it was quite a long process to negotiate, well, first of all, to adjudicate the tenders and then to negotiate a contract with Oracle, but that contract with Oracle was signed in 2016. And when we started the preparations for the implementation, which entailed, you know, a strategy for that, then there was a decision also taken to do an envision phase. Now, envision is one of Oracle's implementation methodology phases. It is essentially where you do detailed planning design of the solution going forward. That is currently happening. So, Chair, from this year onwards, we will finish the envision phase. It's projected to be finalized by the middle of the year. We will procure implementation services to implement the solution, first of all, in pilot sites. And then next phase will be lead sites. I think my colleagues from Treasury will speak to that. And there's a process to initiate a so-called Center of Excellence in CETA that will deal with the long-term support and maintenance of the solution. And I assume CETA will talk more about that. Chair, the next slide, slide 9, just gives you a graphical overview of the difference between IFMS 1 and 2. Now, and I don't want to repeat what I said, but if you look at IFMS 1, the blue blocks was the stuff that was, or the modules that was supposed to be developed in-house. The yellow blocks was purchased from industry. So we moved from that model to IFMS 2, where everything is being procured from industry, and this will be the Oracle solution. All right. Chair, then we were specifically requested to talk about the piloting of IFMS, and the next two slides just give you a sense of that. I mentioned some of it already. As part of IFMS 1, and at that stage, we didn't talk about pilot sites. And I think it came from a recommendation by our then minister, Minister Geraldine Fraser-Moleketi, who said, you're not really piloting this. You are going to implement, you just implement initially in lead sites to refine it, to identify areas where you might have to change direction. So we didn't use the term pilot site in those days. So the lead sites that were selected for HR was DPSA, our own department, and the Free State Department of Education. Procurement management was supposed to be implemented in National Treasury and Department of Defense. Catalog management in Treasury. And then asset management was implemented in the POPO, a number of the departments there. But, Chair, as this was happening, the 2013 Cabinet decision came. Well, the first the review and then the decision. And once Cabinet approved it, there was implications for the maintenance and the continued use of these IFMS 1 solutions. So the decision was that where these solutions were already implemented, it meant where it went live, it would still be maintained if the departments want to use it. The implementations that were in progress, and that was essentially in Free State Education and Defense, was not completed, it was stopped. And I think on the CETA side, they had to scale down their support and maintenance capacity for the IFMS 1 solutions, because it was clear that these solutions will be phased out as we implement IFMS 2. So DPSA and Treasury is still continuing to utilize IFMS 1 solutions, although in our case, the HR solution that we use have not been available since end of February this year. If the system crashed and there was technical issues, we are currently working on a strategy to either bring it back up or to simply formally terminate it. Jay, in terms of the new IFMS and where we will now pilot or lead site the new solution, at this stage the thinking is that DPSA and Treasury would be ideal pilot sites for the initial implementation, and I state some of the reasons there. First of all, we are some of the so-called key stakeholders of IFMS, so it means we must take the pain first and make sure that once the system has been implemented in our department. It is ready for implementation in others. We are the first of secondly the policy owners for these areas covered by the IFMS, DPSA for HR and Treasury for the rest. Another important reason is we are the current users of the IFMS One solutions, and they cost quite a significant amount of money to maintain them. We want to terminate those solutions as soon as possible. And then fourthly, we are fairly well-resourced, fairly well-capacitated departments. We are based in the center of Pretoria. It's close to the center of where the team, the implementation team will sit. So it's seen as ideal departments, but there must still be a final decision specifically around DPSA. There is a number of implications, so that decision has not yet been finalized. Once the pilot site implementations have been finalized, the intention is then to refine the system further in provincial sites. And at that stage, the thinking is that it will be the Western Cape Provincial Administration. They came forward to suggest that their whole province be used, as well as the Eastern Cape, but that will be a limited number of departments. Potentially the Provincial Treasury, the Office of the Premier, and I think the Department of Social Development in Eastern Cape. Chair, and that is as far as my part of the presentation goes. I think Treasury will now go into the rest, maybe give you more sense in terms of the plans going forward.
Thank you, Chairperson. From Treasury, we have three representatives. On my far left, the big guy, is the director of the IFMS, currently an acting chief director. So the buck stops with him. And next to me is the Pila Mhlakaza. And then next to me is Laura Msemi. She is the Chief Director for the Department Strategic Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. And of course myself, Stadim Gomezulu, Deputy DG for Corporate Services. So some few comments and observations before I hand over to Laura for the presentation. I think firstly I need to share the same sentiments as was expressed by DDG Govender. There is no justification for any department not to respond to the questions raised by the committee. I think we need assistance of the committee so that we can get guidance, vision, the wisdom, inputs that would help us to fast track the IFMS project. So by not responding to questions raised, I think it's just not acceptable. But as DDG Kenny Romenda said, I think we promise Kenny and we commit that within the next few weeks, or we should actually give a specific date to say.
All
right, thank you. I was just saying I share the sentiments with him that we shouldn't really delay committees with answers. From our side, I have been with Treasury since the inception of IFMS, so there won't be excuses. You won't have issues like it wasn't me. We are going to try and respond to all the comments that was raised by members when you started. Issues of using Americans, determination of IFMS 1 to 2, which DPSA has, actually DPSA has captured most of the things, the questions that were raised. So our presentation is going to be shorter because we don't want to repeat what has been said. And then we have the financial figures that we will share with you. Maybe the last point that I need to make before I hand over for presentation is that as Parliament, I agree, legislature is one entity. We do these presentations to a number of committees. We have done a detailed one with figures, questions asked to the Standing Committee on Finance. We have done one at SCOPA. Unfortunately, Mr. Nyamabo is not here. So I'm just saying somehow, with the assistance of each other, we might be in a position to share some useful information and not leave the committee waiting for a meeting like this to have information. So if we can have a way, maybe dealing with the secretariat as to this information. As I was listening to the opening remarks of the members, most of this information is readily available in Parliament, but we need to know how to do it. And I'm well aware that each committee has its own mandate and its own vision, but some of the things we can share. With those few opening remarks, I'm going to hand over to Laura as the head of strategic planning to take us through the presentation, and we will skip what DPSA has already said so that we use most of the time to interact and provide answers. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. DDG Gomezulu. Ms. Laura, over to you. Honorable Van der Waals, you are most welcome. Thank you for coming. Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you very much, and good morning to the committee and fellow colleagues. As DDG has indicated, given that the committee has already had sight of the presentation, I'm just going to highlight key matters, and in particular just to focus on our implementation approach, our plan timelines, which is a critical component of the questions that were asked us at the opening of this meeting, and our progress. I'll then hand over back to DDG, who will answer the specific questions asked by the committee in the opening of this process. So if you could look at slide 14, 15 and 16 in consolidation, it is an indication of where we are currently and our strategic roadmap going forward. We are currently in phase two, which is the architecture planning, having completed phase one, which is the software agreement. It was completed with Oracle, and I'm sure that's part of the answer that we're going to speak to around the selection of the service provider and the procurement process thereunto. Phase two, which is the phase we're currently in, it's planned for November 2017 to June 2018. And at the end of this phase, we will have a design and the template developed. We are moving rapidly towards phase 2B, which is the pilot site implementation. As previously referenced, it is planned currently for DPSA and National Treasury. It must be emphasized that the plan is to implement all four, five of the modules. That's financial management, HR management, payroll, supply chain management, and business intelligence in those pilot sites, remembering that this is one of the key benefits of the system, is that we implement as a consolidated composition of all of these key support services, and not as we implement concurrently, and that will then assist us in terms of rapidly moving towards full implementation. We will move from there in September 2019 to February 2021 to lead site implementation. The lead sites have been identified. It's Eastern Cape and Western Cape government, province, and we're planning to implement in three departments in each of those provinces. Phase three, which is of course of critical importance for us, which is the national rollout, it will commence in April 2021. The end date will be determined by the completion of phase two, which is where we are now in terms of the architect planning. And that is the long-term planning. It will be implemented throughout government, and we will do it in the same way as we're doing the pilot site implementation in terms of the modules. At this stage, we believe that as we have defined the plan, so we are implementing. So we are not seeing any key risks that will prevent us from finishing phase 2A and moving into phase 2B within the broad parameters of our current plan. If I can then move on to the program status, as we've indicated, I'm now at slide 18. We are in phase 2A and we are moving towards phase 2B. We have provided you a dashboard of our progress, and it is a summary against our four key indicators that we use to assess the program, namely governance, CETA hosting infrastructure, our change management component, and the architectural planning and design. We've provided you that dashboard. If you have any questions on the specifics of our progress against any of those four program indicators, please do ask us at the end. Then as we move into strengthening implementation, I'm now on slide 20 for the committee. We have, in addition to those planned activities for implementation of the program, we have also given you detail of the activities we've undertaken to strengthen program management and better support delivery, given the recent challenges that has been discussed, as the DDG indicated, in other committees. And a number of these activities that we are now focusing on, in addition to our program activities, we believe will significantly address historical challenges in this program and move towards rapid and advanced implementation of all components of this program as planned. In terms of the program governance, we have provided you with our program governance methodology as we apply it, and I'm quite sure, given that this is not the first time the committee has considered the IFMS, that this is well known to you. We just want to emphasize that part of what we are doing to enhance the program management of IFMS is that we're ensuring that the governance structure, as we've previously defined and is now set up, is effectively operating and is strengthening the governance oversight over this program, both in terms of the strategic leadership on slide 23, both in terms of strategic leadership, reminding the committee that the IFMS is has ministerial oversight between the three departments, as well as an operational oversight. We have also, going on to slide 24, we've also provided detail on the operational level oversight, because we recognize in projects of this size, of this complexity that is spread across three departments and over an extended period of time, that the real delivery is the coalface of this project. And it's often at the coalface that we have implementation and oversight challenges. So we've provided you with detail on how the work streams within the IFMS are being delivered and how we've strengthened and are in the process of strengthening the project management office. In terms of the funding model, DDG will address the issues of the procurements and the selection of the service provider and its relation to local content or service provision, as well as the costs to date. But most importantly, I'm sure he will indicate to the committee the significant savings National Treasury negotiated up front in this program. But just to indicate that the funding model as it stands is that National Treasury is responsible for the project acquisition and implementation, so the upfront funding and the setup funding, but that implementation sites will be responsible for funding based on their usage as we go into the maintenance phase of this program. finally, just before I hand over to DDG, we recognise and to give the committee some comfort, National Treasury recognises that this program has dependencies, and we've indicated some of those key risk dependencies that we are addressing. Suffice to indicate to the committee that we are putting into place measures to address these dependencies, and these include instruments such as service level agreements, MOUs, program implementation plans, stringent and robust monitoring and evaluation, both of this program and this program in relation to the department's reporting ecosystem, such as National Treasury, and clear and defined resource demand plans. On that note, I'll hand over to DDG.
Chairperson, I'm not quite sure at this stage whether I should start answering the questions or rather let CETA finalize, as some of the questions will be in their presentation, but I take direction from you. Otherwise, I will be taking the meeting to answering the questions that the members ask before hearing what CETA is saying. But I'll take the direction from you, Chair.
I thought from where I'm seated, I suggested that as you take us through the presentation, do fill up those gaps. Then it will depend whether those questions that you think you will answer, CETA will cover them. But if we are done with you, we'll be done, then we'll engage. I would suggest that take that opportunity now. Thank you.
So, Chair, a number of questions were asked. The appointment of the service provider who is a foreign-based company, I think that was addressed. But I can add that this was as a result of specifications that whoever needs to deliver IFMS must be a Tier 1 service provider in technology, and there are few of them around the world. So we issued a tender via CETA, Tier 1. We received only four bid proposals. Oracle was ultimately found to be the best after going through the process, but of significance, and we have a letter to them to say you need to make this public so that it's not just your word and there's no one who can concur on it. The deal with Erocal was the cheapest by more than 50% of the second best bidder. I'm not going to mention their name. I think Oracle we can mention because they're already in the playing space. They gave us a 98% discount. We ended up paying licenses for the rest of government for 461 million rand. That is after a 98% discount. So if you can do your, the good doctor is here, I know he studied statistics. He can tell you how much we would have ended paying, billions and billions of rand. So we paid 461 million.
No, you know what, DPG?
Yes.
We are dealing with figures, right?
Yes.
When we procure, you go out for tender or calling for quotations.
Yes.
You've got, obviously, from where I'm seated, I might be wrong, but I don't think so, that you will have your specifications with the pricing that it shouldn't go so much and all that, and we are not giving us that figure, just giving us the 98%, which we really appreciate, but it must be scientifically informed. Thank you.
Chair, with all due respect, I mean, what is 98%?
Of what?
Of what? And I really want to know how somebody can give you 98% discount. and still deliver good quality? I mean, really, what was the amount? What exactly is the figures for 98% discount? And on what basis does a company give you 98% discount? On what?
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chair. We will endeavor. And one other thing I did not mention, which is maybe I need to declare now. We did the tender in collaboration with CETA. We did the specifications as National Treasury. The evaluation was a combination of employees from CETA, DPSA, and National Treasury. So, these companies, and I don't want to mention the others, but maybe I might as well do it. One of the biggest competitors of Oracle is SAPS. So, both of them presented figures. Both of them, the way they operate, I don't know. For an example, you would notice, I will give a silly example. When you buy those who have cars and you change tires of your car, you always notice that they tell you what you are paying is 50% of the price. You notice that. So you ask yourself, so the pricing is such a way that the market competes on discount. I will,
we're not getting this presentation for the first time, but also we know what informs us to have a follow-up meeting with the Tresa. But also, mind you, we are oversight in terms of DPME, DPSA, and Stats SA. So any information, as parliamentarians, we can get it, and we've got it, because also we go through the NDF financials and the plans of all departments that we've got an interest, because they can't go all of them, informed by certain reasons that we have prioritized our activities, the soft issues as it were. So when you respond to us, Kindly don't school us. Just deal with the matters. There's nothing in this portfolio committee that is technical, I promise you. We will really appreciate that you raise the bar when you present to us. You give us the figures, because we have done our homework.
Yes.
Because the other issues that you haven't even spoken to, the issues, not about the American company. It's about that the policy of the country is that we've got African states. We've got South Africans, young people who are tech ICT engineers, qualified ones, young, bright, ever-changing ones. For an example, 2 weeks back, on Friday, when we're dealing with vote, DPME vote, DG brought about, there were 8 or 10 young South Africans, not in terms of race, South Africans, who have innovations which seeks to assist our government, but also you've got your science and technology, which is their core mandate, but also in terms of this family, which is DPSA, we've got Center for Innovation. So we are not so bankrupt in terms of understanding that one, but also we'll appreciate when you use figures, you use the correct figures which are in the books. If you are not too sure today, we'll forgive you in writing, we'll submit it. So don't give us the political response, give us the administrative, technical response that we are expecting at this committee. That's why I'm saying technically, administratively, not political, the narrative one. If we want the narrative one, we'll go to the House and debate with the narrative.
Yes.
So that members, they don't agitate and raise issues, because we intervene when we feel that your presentation tends to belittle our minds and our comprehension of the subject matter. Let me then, she wanted to raise her hand first, then I'll come to you. Honorable
van der Vaart. Chair, I think we must be very straight here. I don't know, I'm not a child, and I can read quite well. Here's the thing, we didn't ask you all the companies that tendered, we didn't ask all their figures. You are now presenting to us Oracle, 461 million rand amount. Then you said straight after that, after 90%, 98% discount, I am asking you to tell this committee the true fact. What was the original amount? What exactly is the 98% telling to? And why 98%? On what basis do you offer 98% discount? That's what we want to know. When we want to know the other companies, we will ask you. Where I'm interested in this, the facts around this deal.
Honourable Tops.
Thank you, Chairperson. Baba Mungemazo.
Yes,
Mr.
Mungemazo.
Baba Mungemazo, we are here being the representatives of the masses of our people out there, on whom the systems that we develop and implement has a very serious impact. I just want to make you aware that you are not addressing the junior officials of Treasury. You are addressing the people who have been charged with the responsibility to make their lives better. And those are the people out there. You therefore cannot come and say, I am not going to give you information. Just like that. You can't say that. But I want to forgive you. Maybe I misunderstood you. But you really cannot say that. Because the minute you say that, you are saying it's either we're incompetent, you are saying we cannot be relied on, you are saying we are dangerous for you to can give us that sensitive information. Maybe I misunderstood you. So I would really withdraw my words if I have misunderstood. But if this is the kind of interaction that you're going to have with a department that is charged with the responsibilities by this government, then we are in serious trouble.
You know, Dr. Ngomezo, let me just tell you the truth also, which it's probably SCOPA should be raising it, is that we have been observing the IT project as proudly presented by your good selves in terms of the presentation, in terms of the time, that it was during former President Thabo Mbeki's time. And some of you have been here before that, and we are very proud. And I tend to say, from where I'm sitting as DPSA, as this collective, this side, that what happens to our KPIs? Who assess you? Why do you get paid? Performance management, that's our area of space that we're interested in. So that means then, by the way, just noted, also then we need to have an interest in terms of treasury now. The other one is that, you know, the IT innovations and the systems and the programs and ever uncommunicating programs that we have in this country is evergreen for other people, that it doesn't get dry. But precisely because it's the project itself is headed by Treasury, who holds the purse. Because for you, the 4 billion is nothing from what you command. But you forget that we've got other needs. Since this administration, not even since, let me take mid-years, 15 years, we have been battling to say how do we make sure that we revolutionize the public service, as it were, administratively.
With the people's money.
With the people's money, by the way. But also we have been talking at that time, before the end of Honorable former Thabo Mbeki's time. There was a big noise that we made as South Africans, in particular in Parliament, to say we are now going to change the system. Systems are going to communicate to each other in all spheres of government. Guess what? You are proudly presenting us this, and you want us to understand. If Cabinet understands, but we are not going to understand it, unfortunately. We pass the budget. We get grilled if we don't do our oversight. Unfortunately, this committee is going to do that one. If it needs to be, we might also as well call it off for today and wait for the minister to come. so that he can tell us. Because before he was reshuffled and reshuffled back, he was responsible for this department. And it's a pity that officials think that politicians come and go. But we have changed. Now your performance as DGs and DDGs. DPME is the project leader in terms of assessing that. And they report to us. So I'm saying there is something that is not clear. And I'm sure that you talk to the areas that Honorable Van der Walt has spoken to. And also before she arrived, the issues that Honorable Domela has talked to. Which figures and factual, if you don't have that information, just say it politely. We're a very good committee. We don't want to behave like scopper. But also we will, because this project has been going on more than 10 years. And it needs something to be done. And even your timeline, by the way, we're not accepting them. It's unacceptable. You want us by 21, I'll be dead. No, I'll be dead, I'll be ancestor. And you are proud to tell me at this time, what legacy I'm going to leave me and you? Yeah, hopefully.
Thank you, Sergeant. We'll come better now. Thank you. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chairman and Honorable Members. Sergeant Dombela, I don't think I have to clarify it. Maybe it's the use of the language. I have no intention of saying there is no information that I would like to share with the committee. So if that's how you got it, I withdraw it and apologize. That's not the intention. But remember in my opening remarks, I was saying if we don't feed the information to the committee, we're not going to get assistance ourselves, because the wisdom comes from these honorable members who would assist us with the way forward. You remember that's what I said. So no intention at all to undermine the committee. I respect that the input coming from here assists us going forward. So maybe, not even maybe, let us go back and give the figures that would have the DG's and minister's signature as opposed to just a verbal feedback here, where we'll explain the 98%, attach the letters thereof, and how much we have spent up to so far. I think it would be fair to have it written, approved by our superiors, your colleagues, and therefore we won't be changing, because it is a rolling target of expenditure. Today, Mr. Pilam Tagaza will tell you we're still paying some local companies that are doing work on IFMS, we must add those figures, and we'll say this is the figure.
Okay, let's do this first. Let's agree that we are done with Treasury. Let's get Sita to take us through. No, we'll come back. Let's so that we don't end up dealing with Treasury only. Because he says he's going to come back with the figures, which means then, because when he introduced himself, by the way, I didn't want to say that. It's just that I can see he wanted to say something. He said he is the DDG, the most important gentleman in Treasury, in the absence of the DG. Very important, okay? And we've got Miss Laura, very technical person, strategic, monitoring and evolution within Treasury. Nobody is above that level from where I'm seated. And then you've got Mhlakaza, Mr. Mhlakaza, the director. And you even said, Babu Mkomizu, that he knows everything, this one. As healthy as he is, but everything is there. But now you are telling us you want to go back. What a nice committee. We will pack that one. Let's deal with Sita. Then we'll come back as a collective project leaders, as threesome, because somebody needs to tell us. That's how you have been listening to Treasury. While you guys were not doing your work and we are shouting at you to say that your HR system is not up to scratch, DPSA, and you still want us to continue doing that. Because which means in your colleagues as officials, you are not hard on them. Because you think that you are a very understanding committee. We have been very nice. But because of the spaces that we have been dealing with, on this one, unfortunately, we're not going to be nice. Sita, over to you, Doc.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and honorable members. I'd just like to introduce the team from CETA. My name is Timo Mahapi. I'm the CEO of CETA. And on my right is Portia Matsena. She is our head of department in charge of all enterprise resource planning and management systems, including existing systems and also the new ones, inclusive of IFMS and also what we're calling G-Commerce, which is an automation system for all public procurement. And then on my left is Mbali Tato, who is has two heads, but formerly she's more program manager on G-Commerce, but she's also been working on IFMS as well. We'll soon be appointing somebody who will be specifically dedicated to IFMS as a program manager. I think at the outset, I'd like just to confirm that, Chairperson, we did respond last year to the questions that were asked. The letter was signed by myself on the 22nd of June, 2017, covering a number of questions that were raised at the meeting was on the 31st of May. Overall, service delivery through IT, how we're transforming the IT environment, questions were asked. Including some of the questions that were asked today about the challenges of PESA in respect of data integrity and potentially allowing for leaks. I think a mention was made of ghost employees and so on and so forth. So we provided some answers there, and we can always refer back to what we said there. Then perhaps before as well, just maybe to touch on and just to re-emphasize on the context questions that were asked before we started here. Yes, PESA is an audited system and it has challenges. It doesn't have probably the flexibility, the internal controls that should be there. Hence, the need to upgrade it. And I suppose as long as it's there, or alternatively, as long as the IFMS is not implemented, we still have the residual risk associated with the weakness of a PESA. The IFMS 1 is still, I think another question was asked, when do we suspend or freeze IFMS 1? It is still being used, and there's a, I think GPSA is at a point where the decision will be made to stop using it. It does cost a lot of money. The two modules that are used by Treasury and DPSA. I think DPSA will probably be making a decision soon to stop using that module. The later on, when we talk about the state of readiness to support the IFMS project, we'll look at the mixture of human resources both in CETA and outside of CETA, and then our approach in terms of local companies. But suffice to say, once the software has been bought, there's still a lot of work that has to be done to configure, implement, and roll out that software. A lot of work that has to be done to support, maintain and support that those applications thereafter. There's a lot of work that has to be done outside of the software in respect, I think it was mentioned here, one of our jobs is to support with the hosting services. There's a lot of work that has to be done to support the underlying networks because the load on the networks when you have a system like this is different to when you have an old system like your current PESA and BIS and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of scope within the bigger program beyond just the software to involve local companies as well. But we'll talk about that. Another question was asked about how we're benefiting from innovations in technology. Again, beyond the software, we have already supported the project with innovation in hosting. If you look at the old hosting environment for the current methods, the current system is mainframe, very, very expensive. The skill sets are getting rarer and rarer. But the way we've done the hosting now for what you call the SendPit, which is a live small system of IFMS, is using what you call cloud computing technologies. And I mean, that is supported, of course, by then the education system and so on and so forth, and the rest of the environment out there. So we are implementing where possible innovations that are coming through. The other question was asked about whether we are ready to provide assurance on the management of data, especially data integrity. And that's quite a complex work job. It is partly related to operations, meaning that we have to have the right people in technical operations. For example, your data, you should have a proper ICT security environment. So we have to have that. You should have proper IT operations environment so that your data, even if it's secure from outside, you don't have crashes that can then disturb your data integrity. But then there's also data integrity to based on business rules, who does what to data, who updates the data, and who checks that the data is proper and so on and so forth. Those are policy-based kind of decisions, so it's quite a complex thing to maintain data integrity. And there are methods out there on ICT governance that assist and guide us on how to maintain data integrity. But those are part of the things that we're developing when we're talking about the generic templates, the phase two A of the work that we've been doing is to design the operating environment to safeguard, among other things, data. Then I will do the presentation, and then the detailed questions, then my colleagues here will be then able to will assist me in answering. Perhaps to start with, we can go to page 15 of the presentation. I'm also a chairperson at the Steercom as well of IFMS, which is chaired by, which is attended by the DGs of the two departments and myself. We made a request that CETA should be given an opportunity to be part of the pilot sites so that we can...
Doc, if you say two DGs, in terms of DPSA, who's the DG that you had meetings with? Because there's an acting DG, there was a DG, so that also we know whom to follow up as when we sit as a committee as well.
Yeah, the function.
Okay.
Yeah, the function DG, and then whichever body is there. Yeah. Thank you. So we ask that CETA should kind of be considered as part of the pilot, so that we are also already running an ERP system that is based on Oracle, and we are going to be consumers of the IFMS in the future. And our request was based on the fact that we want to learn from our own experience, so that when we go into department and say we are migrating you from whatever ERP system to the new IFMS, we already have gone through that journey ourselves as consumers of those services. And that was accepted as well. So we'll be part of the pilot site as well. From an update point of view, 2A, I think it's already mentioned that it's almost over. It's scheduled to be completed at the end of June. We were supposed to procure and implement hosting infrastructure, which we have done. We have a hosting service in our Pieter Maritzburg data center that is also replicated at our Centurion data center as well. And we are running a small instance of IFMS there already. And I mean, from a local use of local companies as well, we are working. We have one of the companies that is working with us as part of our model moving forward is a local company, which is a hardware support company, specializing in Oracle. And I must say, actually, I was meeting them coincidentally yesterday, and it's 30% black women-owned company as well. With pressure for them to, of course, as always, to increase their empowerment representation. But I come to our approach moving forward of involving the local companies. We, as I mentioned, once the software is procured, it has to be implemented, and the joint team is at the stage where we are going to get going to the market to get further augment our capacity on implementation services. We have provided, I think we have developed a generic spec, and that is now being processed within the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer Treasury. And as soon as it's done, we'll then be able to go into the market. I must say that if one looks at the timeline, that creates a dependency on 2B, because for us to then do the implementation of the pilot sites, we would need to have this augmented capacity of implementation services. So I think we will be putting quite a lot of pressure for us to go to the market and complete that and get our augmented capacity in place. The next on, and then I mean the next stage is to, from July, is to then start doing the pilots at the three areas, they primarily National Treasury, DPSA, and then we'll join in there as well as CETA. And then some of the question then is, how ready are we? The method is to implement what we call a center of excellence. At the outset, we accept that the if you look at this, the in government, there are many instances, individual instances of this kind of systems in individual companies, in individual departments. And yes, there will be some Oracle in there, there will be some SAP, and there will be other systems in there. And if you look at the human capital that is involved in supporting the state right now, it is quite big. Because each department will either, then will probably have its own support infrastructure. And most of the time, and from almost all of the time, departments will go into the market and get support from the market itself. The job for us is to create similar capacity now within CETA or around CETA, so that because now there's only one system there, so that first of all, the cost of running, the cost for the state of running the ERP systems gets reduced. And that's one of the benefits of this thing, because then we can use economies of scale. However, if we were to tie and build that capacity within CETA, we would probably be the biggest, in this case, Oracle support entity in the country, private and public sector, because of the size of the work. And obviously, that would then mean also we have to have the answer the question of then what do we do to people who are currently the rest of the industry that is currently doing the work. So when we talk about center of excellence, it's an ecosystem center of excellence that is made up of internal CETA resources and also made up of an ecosystem in the private sector. And if you look at the nature of that ecosystem, it is now nicely distributed, because once you have the system here and it's deployed in the provinces, the people who are going to provide the support in, for example, when we do the next phase, the lead sites in Eastern Cape, will be companies that we grow and we support, we build during the creation of the Center of Excellence, located in the Eastern Cape, located in Free State when we go there, and so on and so forth, supported by a CETA capability that is located in the province itself. So at the end of the day, the Center of Excellence representing an industry capability It's also now geographically distributed. And because we are designing it upfront, we are designing it in the context of our own industry transformation objectives. Our minister, for example, has, during the budget speech, Minister Gwele came out and said that our target for in our financial year for spend on SMMEs is 40% in this financial year. And behind that is what informs that is a CETA in industry transformation program itself. So we provided just for detail, Chairperson, a spreadsheet that shows the different capabilities, technical capabilities that are required for this program. And I think the size of it just demonstrates the size of the job in front of us. I apologize, the second page there is not very clear. Yes. So, it's the Okay, thank you. So if I can ask the committee to go to the second page, unfortunately it's kind of hard to read. But this just shows, I think there are two stories there. I think the question was, where are we now? And if you were, that story is there, and it's a red story. Then where do we need to go? That's the blue story. Then how are we going to get there? That is the last column. Then the question I think will be asked is, when are we going to get there? Well, I'll answer that. Maybe not, and I will ask that we come back with a more detailed project plan for the creation of the Center of Excellence in terms of when. But maybe let me explain this first. So that page alone shows the technical skills. These are the engineering skills required. There are other skills that are required in other pages there, which would be more business functional skills that would be distributed within CETA, and we'll see later on, largely also in the departments, that are now related to the individual modules. Right. So that page just shows the technical skills there. The first part there is, the first top part, for example, that would be showing the more, we don't even show the hosting part, we're covered there, I must say. These are more now Oracle-specific skill sets. There's a need, for example, to have an analytics engine so that we can support the department with the ability to analyze the data. For example, the question, if you were to ask a question and say, how do I know whether or not the integrity of the data from a point of view of ghost employees, we need to build an analytics engine in there. And part of it will be implemented by technical people, but the business questions will come from yourselves, parliament will come from the executive authority, will come from the departments themselves. Right? So we need to have those skills. Do we have data analytics skills today within CETA? No, we don't have. We are going to build them. How are we going to build them? We are going to build them there in terms of capitalization approach through the SMMEs. There will be some resident skills that are in another area, by the way, which is our application development area. Let me say, for example, Our application development team, for example, right now is at the Tshwane University of Technology, Soshanguve, working with the computer science department there to start introducing future opportunities so that we can hire these data analytics skills within CETA. But we know that some of them are transient as well. We don't want to build a big team for work that does not stay forever. So we build the skills with the SMMEs out there, and we know that not only will they get be able to do work for us, but data analytics happens to be a growing industry in computer science out there. So that prepares them for other areas as well. The second one is database. Database, Oracle database there, we do have some skills there, but we need more volumes. So again, we because this is now getting close to data, Chairperson, that we have to have the people who manage the data of government have to be employed by government, and there will be our employees there because of just the nature of things. Then the other part is the middleware, which is more technical hardware, and there it will be a combination of using the market through SMMEs and also our own people. And then applications, then it will be our own people, departments, and then a bit of the market. You'll see there where it now says reskilling, recruitment, and build capacity internally. You'll see there that's when we get close to applications and we're providing application support. And from a risk point of view, it is quite important for us to have such people to be employed directly by us. So the model of the SOE, of the Center of Excellence, is the closer, from a risk perspective, the closer you are to critical information, then we hire. Where you get services, the way things are more generic, then you use the market, particularly because where they are more generic, then it's also the geographic distribution is also wider, so forth. You'll see there that we're saying that OEM partnerships, what we are doing is we say ESD, which is our enterprise and supply development. So we create capacity. We create capacity working with the OEM themselves. So instead of us going to OEM and OEM goes and does their own things, they work with us to create capacity on our own terms. So I think that those are the stories about where we are now, where we need to go. And Chairperson, the target for building the Center of Excellence is that it must be completed fully to support the pilot implementation. The template for it is almost done, and then the training modules will be completed. I mean, we do have, for example, training credits, and just the first page of this document here shows you the credits or what we've bought already. Let me not say credits because we bought them already. We bought training, and shows how much is already available and for what areas or courses that we should be able to start training people across within CETA and within the departments already. And then we'll keep expanding that thing as and when, as we build more capacity both internally and externally. So we're quite confident that with the money that are available right now, we will be able to build the internal capacity and also support the SMMEs. We know that the SMMEs are there. I mean, there are people who are at different levels of certification with Oracle. The process of identifying them is not difficult. It's really just doing it and then getting them on the training programs. So it does look like the risk is high, but the mitigation is quite strong. Thank you very much.
Honorable members, do you want to close again, DPSA?
No, ma'am. I think the information so far is we tried to capture the issues you raised. I'm hoping we've addressed a number of those things. But if there are any further questions, we'll try and address them. But as agreed, some of the things we will have to look at it in writing and come back to you with further detail.
Honourable DM, then I'll come to honourable members.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. I've just carefully been listening, and I realized the extent of the problem that we've got. I'm just hoping that with time we will manage to actually really deal with this. What is really of concern is to look at the time we have actually spent trying to actually do this whole process of integrated financial management. It takes South Africa almost 20 years to look at the child that was born in 2005 as to where they are today. Soon they will get married. With us really grappling with just doing integrated financial management, I think, Chair, you've actually said something like, how do we then assess our performance and things like that? Something that just doesn't seem to be right. We need to put our finger on what exactly is wrong in order for us to be in the position to manage to really deal with this once and for all. And of course, the timelines also are worrying, the 2021 timeline. It might be the cause, maybe I don't have enough information, but what it actually means is that if we consent with time that has been spent on the project up to now, and we still are looking forward to spending more years on it, it actually makes it worse. So, yeah, I think we will look into it, Chairperson. I hope maybe with time we will be in the position to report better. And it's something that I will personally take interest in, to go and look into it and see to what extent we can be in the position to be of assistance to the committee.
Please do, because I know Honourable van der Vaart will go on town on this one before you do that. But on a serious note, you know, some of us were employed as politicians and would love to be retained. But if you guys doing this, we are not going to come back. And it worries me that are we serious? But also it goes against your own professional credibility as well. Honourable van der Vaart, let's do this. Let's start from my far right, then all of us will speak. No, please wait. Let's do the normal way. Thank you.
Thank you. I won't steal your thunder.
No,
I'm joking. Just a couple of things. Guys, I have to do this. That's when I become myself now. I'm quite despondent about this, but also I think we need to just touch on the positives. The deputy minister has just touched on this. It's a gestation period too long, absolutely too long. The government has a very bad name, that we don't get anything done, and we get blamed as the people who don't do proper oversight. So I'll start with the positives. If you look at this slide number 4, right at the top, you talk about business improvements. That's the attitude that we need to take. We've got to approach these things as a business. We need to do that. Otherwise, we end up not doing anything because it's like, okay, you know, the treasurer will give the money and it can happen maybe, I don't know when. And the chair just said here, she'll be dead by the time this project gets to fruition. We can't have that. I don't want it to die on me. So, you know, here's another thing. So let's stress on the business side. Something that was said in passing, but it's important. We were told that the buck stops with Smedje in this particular instance. The buck must always stop somewhere with someone. That's my favorite expression. People in Parliament know that. Somebody has to take responsibility so that when things don't happen, they crack the whip, because we will crack the whip on his back. And that's important. The concern I have really when government officials come and talk to us is this notion of we are going to begin to. When we're in the middle of something, we're supposed to have done it already, and we're beginning to do something. Here's another one. Pick up on this one. Laura, I think, Ms. Laura used this one, rapid implementation, or was it the doctor? Please, guys, rapid implementation. I have an expression, I call it with deliberate speed. We need to do these things. And when you guys have to deal with your ministers, and your ministers don't do what you expect them to do, you come to us. We will unlock whatever needs to be unlocked. So, colleagues, this is really my taking out my frustration on this one. Uh-huh. Laura, just one word. You used an expression here, work streams. All right, I won't say anything more, right? Yeah, yeah. All right.
Honourable, thank you, Honourable. Chair, I just want to raise something. I don't think any one of us sitting here and underestimating the size of this project. I don't think we do. And we can understand years of research and prep and integration and all of that. However, when we come to Parliament, we first of all provide documentation prior to a meeting so that MPs can do their homework before they sit here. I don't want to come here and look at the presentation and then ask questions, because where we come from, we actually have to come prepared and do our research on our own. So that is not on. The other thing is, we must also understand when we come to Parliament, whatever we give here is related to our job. And we have to, in all honesty, be factual and give the information MPs ask. There's nothing like I have to ask my superior or the other minister, or, I mean, we intergovernmental departments, etc., etc. Here's my thing. Because easily, especially in opposition, and that's not our task, we here work for the better of government. That's what we do here. It's easy to play politics. I don't want to embarrass the minister or the deputy, and neither do I want to embarrass your president, our president in the country. None of us want to do that. But if we come here and we get this, you make it so easy to embarrass everybody and make the people out there think that this parliament is just a, I don't know, I almost said rubbish, but that's unparliamentary. Yes. But Chair, here's the thing. I mean, you know, if you tell me people quoted on a tender which they won and the amount was, I don't know, $1,000, and they get 98% discount, work out what's 98% on 1,000. So the ordinary person would think, my gosh, it's got nothing left. How could they tender?
And why are they
leaving? Yeah. And where's this 98%? I don't get it. Now, I know it's not that simplistic. I understand it very well. Some of us have got a bit of figure backgrounds too. The thing is this, we want to have the details. It is not going to be a secret to know that Oracle got a tender for X amount. It's not a secret. But we want to know why. And then my next question would be, so if they got a 98% discount, is their system going to allow for integration with the other system that can tell us which business, officials are actually doing business with government? Because if you have such a great system, at the end of the day, some button must just tell you, here's the red light flickering. You know, I mean, and Chair, with all due respect, I mean, I went to town on the bloated cabinet and all the expenses of government departments, etc., etc. We're not coming to Cape Town for an evening out. We actually come here to work. And when we ask questions, we want the answers. Now, how long are we going to wait before we get these answers to progress to the next step? Because there is more than one department involved. But I am really very, very concerned. The other thing is, if we go into another 20 to 2021, that's another 3 years, what provider for cost escalation is there in the contract signed? Because we have a habit in government, from local to national, to actually sign contracts, go over our time, and then when they come with some or other amendment on the cost, we just pay it. Surely, in the old days, in 95 when I started, we actually had a provision that there could be an escalation up to a certain point, and then it stopped. But if you go beyond that time, you can't come back to government and ask for more. Yeah, indeed. We must really, really, the people in this country are starving. There are too much inequality. This is the people's money that we are dealing with. It's not your money. It's definitely not my money. So please, can we just get real facts on time, in advance, and really, really make sure we are not, I don't know, I won't say protecting anybody because that would be a false accusation, I hope. But Chair, 98% of what? What does this deal include? Because we've been hiding this since I came to this committee in 2017 and in your time even before that.
Touch the wood. Honourable Cotton.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks to all the colleagues who made presentations. Chairperson, I'm just concerned that, you know, this has been approved somewhere in 2013, it's reported, but my worry is that I'm not convinced that we are ready to implement because on presentation it is said we still are to involve local companies for implementation. What makes you think that you are ready if really you still to come back with the project plan? Is there value for money? That's what we want to know. It is reported that IFMS was considered to be too complex to implement. Then my question would be as to what really are the risks that has been identified from both IFMS 1 and 2 in order to implement going forward? Are we really up to the task towards the implementation? Lastly, Chairperson, it has been said that the implementation is done in national and in the province, but my other issue is that we have got serious challenges, this is my observation, serious challenges in local government. I don't know as to really will it be a serious problem if the rollout or the implementation is directed where there are serious challenges, as I've indicated, that in local government, it's where we are having serious challenges. Why are we always starting on top? Or it's just because we are still learning or what makes us to start with national government, while we know the serious challenges with regard to financial management, it's in local government. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Kosa. Honorable Doctor.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Mr. Kanel, he said you got advice from the World Bank and Ernst & Young about the hybrid solution that was used then. That's what you said. And then I lumped that together with this spectacle of Oracle. I'm beginning to ask myself, Comrade DM, or
ultimately, where are we? Who are we? Are we South Africans? Are we an extension of America? Because it's not only these departments, but many departments get their services from overseas companies. Now one begins to wonder, do we not have companies that are doing the same thing in our country, and companies that want to be developed to an extent that they're able to match the companies such as Oracle pound for pound? It's our responsibility as a government to do so. But we seem not to be doing it. I'm wondering, why is that? Are we saying, colleagues, we absolutely do not have a company in South Africa that can provide the same service as Oracle? Or is it a question of not providing enough incentives? I happen to know a company in Pretoria that is able to provide services of this nature. And in their profile, listen to this. In their profile, this is what they are saying. I wanted to share this with you. Okay, in a nutshell, Chair. They are saying they are a rocket fuel to the government. That is in terms of moving from the paper-based processes to what we envisage, all of us, in terms of what we are to implement for IMS. They are saying they are very capable of providing 100% support in achieving our objective as government, that is, of the modernization that we are talking about. I'm saying here is a company, South African, customized to the situation that we are in. They are saying, no, it's not enough. Let's go to America. And if the first phase of this project has been kept the way it is, why do you continue with Oracle again? What makes you think Oracle is the only capable service provider that can give us what we want? You know, the interesting part of it, Chair, is that we have adopted 2030, the objectives of NDP 2030 as government, with all the political parties concerned. Now, we are told that this project is going to run up to 2030, parallel to our objectives. So in other words, we are not going to achieve in making public service a career of choice, because this is service delivery. We'll not be able to provide service delivery. That's what they're saying. And now I'm getting shocked. I really got shocked. Obviously, Dr. Mahabi, it is our intention to build capabilities and so on. But the license is in the hands of Oracle. So it becomes their decision whether to involve local engineers where possible. That's the impression that I'm getting, that when they need their engineers at exorbitant amounts, they'll get their engineers, not our engineers. It all depends on them. That's the impression that I have. You will assist me in that particular regard. But my emphasis here, why can't we use our own local talent? Maybe I need to mention, you have box office in Pretoria. They are also software specialists. Did they not provide enough incentives? What are they running short of? And lastly, Chairperson, I'm aware that the pilot sites that are going to be where the project will be continuing
the pilot sites happen to be the new ones. Why don't we use the old pilot sites and continue with them rather than using new pilot sites? Because my understanding is that once you decide that this is a pilot site, you obviously have to put some resources there to make it possible for you to achieve your objectives. Why then don't you concentrate on the old one instead of choosing the new one as a way of going forward? But I just wanted to check the rationale behind Chairperson. But I thought that our former president had said it very clearly that we are Africans. So let us be Africans. Let us be Africans. That's where we are lacking. Let's improve. Let's try to empower our people. Put them at the level where we need them to assist us. Thank you, Chair.
Do you want to come back?
No, just to find out if your experience, Chairperson, at what point do you regard the project as a failed project? Or if people don't know the project? And then on license, I think we'll come from Honorable Thomas. You're right.
Because I'm talking about the whole issue of licensing and having to pay a lot of money on licensing to say the plea would be maybe moving forward indeed to look at utilization of local talent. And another problem might be that we do so much but we don't connect the processes that are within government. Half the time we talk about innovation that is government sponsored, which was supposed to give you an answer. You don't even have to go to those companies maybe that you're talking about. From within government, we could actually, through programs that are about innovation, come up with something that can actually give us and something that would move us away from having to pay lots and lots of monies on licenses. Licenses that can actually also hold you at ransom when you want to pull out of the contract, because half the time I think they go away with their licenses.
Yeah.
And then you almost like begin the whole process from scratch, which is what has happened even in correctional services. If you look at correctional services itself for now, and the kind of IT systems they've got, they have regressed as compared to what they used to have when Gijima was there. I don't know what happened to the Gijima program, which was actually excellent. But if it's a license and we don't have intellectual ownership of it, I mean, we're wasting our time. Because half the time you're going to find that you built up a system, at some point you find that system is withdrawn for whatever reason, and you're left with nothing after paying so much of money. What we need to look at, and maybe this is where CETA needs to assist us, is how do we develop a sustained IT system for government, so that the monies that government is actually using towards IT are sustainable, and they actually articulate into what would make a government and public service to be more viable. Otherwise, we're going to find that even in 20 years' time, we'll be sitting around, if it's ourselves, maybe there'll be some young people and they'll be wondering what was wrong with us.
Mm.
Because they'll be almost like beginning the whole process with no systems available. So what we can actually then tell ourselves also for now is that we need to revisit how we actually organize around just integrated IT or financial systems within government in a way that is possible. For now, by now, we're supposed to be just with the press of the button developing reports, and I'm supposed to come here with a tracking system that has always been there in the country, but it seems like to bring it into government is difficult. I was just thinking about banks themselves, because the clientele that you're talking about within public service is lesser than what the banks are dealing with, but the banks can make it, do it, and they do it successfully. Now, what becomes impossible for us to do it for government? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Don't worry, sometimes I talk like an MP. Not everyone is negative. No. Here we are together. On this one, we are all together because DPSA also won't perform if we don't get this one right as well.
We need solutions. We need actions.
Having said that, picking up from the pilot issue that Honorable Dombele have raised, that White informed you to abandon the first phase, the phase preferred pilot, or who decided on that, to say let's go to the new ones? Because the lessons that you would have learned from those ones, you would not necessarily repeat them. And what guarantee do you have that whatever mistakes, technical mistakes from the first pilot side are not repeated? And how much have we spent? Unfortunately, we want figures, Mr. Ngomezulu. Those ones were so, we want figures. But also, threesome. While we are working this, dealing with this project, departments are doing their own systems to improve their IT system, their HR system, their supply chain system, and so forth. How much money then, the 4 billion that is in the path of Treasury, and also the money that is there, which I will term it in a layman's point of view, is very wasting. And we are aware that we are wasting money in that space. And who stands to benefit? But also Treasury. One of the good days you appear before SCOPA, and SCOPA said to you that they, let me just go to my notes here, I'll tell you just now what they said, and would like you also to take us in confidence on that one. Treasury reported that SCOPA meeting that there was a forensic audit on the IFMS, which was commissioned by Treasury. You reported that. What is the status of that report? Is there anything to worry? Because there is something to worry, but you tell us. And how much was spent? Because the forensic audit also has got figures. And what are you intending to do with that? In terms of now, whoever have been found wanting in that space. But also there's somewhere also, but I need confirmation on this one, that some companies also or contractors that were paid provided us with a substandard work. Would like to know, as DPSA, who was responsible for that failure? Who was the project leader? After spending so much, it's not even millions, it's billions. That's what we want to know. Did we manage to recycle that individual? The other one you have spoken to. Your timelines. Whatever reason, technical reason that you come up with, revisit your timelines. If I say revisit your timelines, I mean the threesome. But also from my side, Treasury, the Demcomis will repeat this with the Minister as well. We are not too happy where the IT, I know even at a municipal level for whatever good reason, but the good reason that I have from where I'm sitting is that it's evergreen, the ICT infrastructure. Soft and also the technology and the gadgets and everything. And it becomes a problem when you go and harvest the food from the plantation and you also package the food and you also cook the food for yourself and you determine whom you are going to share the food with. It becomes a problem. Unfortunately, we have been under this impression that Treasury is clean, is corrupt-free.
perceived, let me use that word because I don't want to be accusing anyone, it's perceived. Because I might be wrong, I don't know. But also your systems are up on stretch. When we invoke Section 100, Treasury takes over. Northwest takes over. But nobody oversight in terms of monitoring evaluation of Treasury. Nobody in terms of DPSA also. In terms of oversighting on Treasury in terms of the DPSA regulations and compliance as it were. I'm dealing with the soft issues. Nobody does that. And I think it's high time that we pay interest on that. Especially because of this project. It cannot take more than 15 years. Not even a single department that we can say this one, notwithstanding the challenges, but we are moving forward. Honestly, there is something wrong. And we're saying SCOPA must be the last stop. Committees must deal with these issues because also it also impacts on our integrity and our capacity in terms of doing our oversight, which means we're doing nothing, as Honorable Fadebat was saying. And we're worried about that. And we want this project to be finalized in our lifetime, DPSA, Mr. Govender. Whatever you say to your colleagues, we don't care. But we want this project to be finalized. In terms of the payroll, your human resource in your dashboard, we want that one to happen in our lifetime. Our lifetime ends in May next year. As this administration.
Mr. Governor, thank you. Mr. Governor mentioned, no, I'm of the impression that I don't know whether it's that our last engagement, Dr. Mhapi, that the whole project will amount to about 4 point something billion. I've got that at the back of my mind. But I'm also asking myself that what's going to be the cost of Oracle's licenses for the next 10 years? And what is going to be the cost of developing and customizing the Oracle system in order to conform with our South African standards? That is in terms of the processes of our South African standards. How is it going to cost us? And I also wanted to check lastly on how ready are our state organs with the implementation? Because we were saying at a certain point in time we've got to implement, but in the meantime, how are we beginning to ready them, these state organs, for that purpose? Thank you very much.
For your information, Mr. Govender, you might be aware that also we are putting to review the public sector structure organogram and what it means to this project. If you can look at that. But also, Dr. Mohapi, you also spoke about the specifications in terms of your local companies or service providers, rather. Mr. Mgomezu, when you got that license of 98% discount, obviously, that software that you have received has got certain specifications that is tailored made for certain companies. Based on the capacity that we might not, I don't know, we might not necessarily have it within the country. So what is going to happen? But also the fundamental question that I want to ask, who were we involved as a country on those specifications? Because it will inform then the whole project, technically speaking. And what guarantee then the local vendors, service providers, technical engineers and all that are going to benefit? I will request then, there are questions that we are not necessarily going to respond now, because you must think very carefully how to respond. But I'll request that Honorable Fadevat, because she wanted to be excused, that...
Sorted.
Okay. Then you can start with the questions as the way. Those ones whom you think that you are not ready, you should be. We might not be calling you as threesome, but DPSA should be able, when we come back and engage with you, to give us the really things that were going to happen. Because also it cannot, because the cabinet agreed. technocrats advise cabinet. That's why they agree, because probably at that time it makes sense, but to us, in our lifetime, it doesn't make sense.
Madam Chair, thank you very much, President. Thank you very much, honourable members, for all of those questions. Mm. They were comprehensive. I think from our side, we need to go back as the three of us, CETA, National Treasury, and DPSA, and we need to put together constructive responses to a number of these questions. Yes, we will attempt to answer some of them here, but we will give in writing all of the questions raised, answers to those questions, and we will work through the Deputy Minister's office to make sure we get it back to the committee. And I think thereafter the committee will decide whether there's a need for a follow-up meeting based on the responses we gave to seek further clarity. So we will definitely do that from our side, Madam Chair. But just to raise a couple of these issues, the questions around the time frames and trying to shorten it and make sure we get it done, as Madam Chair puts it, within our lifetime, we all get into that point now. So we need to finalize this as soon as possible. I think we need to go back and revisit it as the three parties responsible from the funding side, the policy side, as well as from the implementation side, as to how rapidly we can get this done without compromising the implementation and other challenges. So we need to make sure that gets done. There's been a number of questions that have been asked around local content and local issues and building local capacity. And I think the CEO for CETA has addressed a number of those issues. But one of the core responsibilities in the work we're trying to do here is to ensure that we build the skills in the country. We want to grow capacity in the country. Because remember, the moment we implement this, it's going to be a system that's in place for the next 20, 30 years. So you need capacity to maintain it, further developments, further announcements, further all of that work that needs to be done going forward. So we don't have a choice. We have to build the skills to make sure the system functions effectively going forward. So that work will be done, and we will have to give figures, some sort of projections from our side as to what are the capacity we need, the numbers, the quantity, the cost of it, and all of those things. So we will look at that and come back. I think the points around National Treasury and the costing, National Treasury has made notes, and we will provide greater details in terms of the actual cost versus the 98% discount. In relation to the tender process and what was concluded in that regard, we need to do that. I want to point out, though, I mean, there are a number of other issues around the study. The reason we did the study, remember in 2013, we were making very little progress with the implementation of IFMS1. And the challenge we were facing at that stage, this approach of bespoke versus commercial off the shelf, and trying to integrate all of them was just not working. And the cost implications, and remember all of that building was taking place locally. CETA insourced to some of the skills to do some of that bespoke work. Some of the bespoke was outsourced to companies and all local companies to do the building in relation to this. And there were serious challenges in trying to get that thing off the ground and get it working and the integration of all of that. And that's when we commissioned these research papers. I think one was commissioned by CETA, one by National Treasury, two by Treasury and one by CETA to do those research. Ernst & Young was one of the auditing companies that did some of the work. Gartner, through, I know CETA has some sort of a long-term arrangement with Gartner to do some of this research. And that research study then pointed us in a particular direction, and Cabinet then took a decision. Remember, all of that research papers culminated in a Cabinet memorandum where we went back to Cabinet and said, you approved a particular approach in 2005. And that approach we tried, and these are the challenges, and it's not working. If we continue with that, we're basically flogging a dead horse at that point. And we then took the decision to approach Cabinet to say, give us new direction based on these research papers. And I think one of the key points that emerged from that research paper, that the size of implementation, remember we're talking about here an implementation across the public service with the intention of going to local government and public entities at some point. So the size of that and the work we needed to do, you must bring on board what they call a tier one organization, a tier one OEM. So your original equipment suppliers and software. And there are very few of those internationally would do that. And there, I don't think there's any tier one suppliers in South Africa from what we are aware of. And therefore, we had to look at it from that perspective. because of the magnitude, the size of the work. But that does not mean that we're not going to use local people in the implementation, the support, the maintenance going forward. But unfortunately, the solution you're looking for, which is enterprise-wide, and remember here we were looking for all five modules in one ERP solution, and that's only got from your tier one supplier, in a sense. And the challenge was, if you do it any other way, it means building smaller ones in time to join them, and you're going to end up with more challenges. We realized it couldn't work. So that was one of the core reasons that we decided to go this route, and we decided to go with an open tender process to find a tier one supplier. And the big guys did tender, there was a full evaluation, and we got to the point where we did procure. But as we said, we'll come back with more details on why Oracle, but what is the benefit for the country going forward. No matter which way you look at it, the maintenance, the support, the work at a departmental level will have to be done by local people. It can't be done by international people. We're not going to fly Americans down to help us maintain a system in a department in KZN or Limpopo or wherever. Those are local people that we'll have to train, develop, and make sure they're ready to deal with it. Yes, there is a challenge at the moment in relation to departments doing their own thing, where they're procuring, trying to procure. Where we've identified that, remember in 2005 when we started the IFMS project, Cabinet took a decision to place a moratorium that no department should be procuring an HR system because this is part of the IFMS, it's going to be due a double cost. So many of the departments, or I think the majority of them, did not go down that route. Some of them did their own in-house development and so on, but they're small. It could be just for leave management or it could be just for recruitment, but not an ERP solution as a whole. So we tried as far as possible to limit that cost and try and manage it going forward so that we don't have those challenges. Ma'am, you're right. The old pilot sites will be used in IFMS 2. DPSA was pilot in the first one, National Treasury was pilot in the first one, and DPSA and National Treasury should be part of the next round as well, so that the lessons learned are not lost. We then improve on those lessons learned, and the capacity, skills, the readiness, all of those things are carried through into the IFMS too. The advantage now, we have CETA on board as well, so we've got three pilot sites that we can run. And the advantage of CETA is, as they roll it out within CETA itself, they'll be able to learn and correct as we further implement going forward. The forensic audit report, I think National Treasury will speak to that and how we're going to respond to it. 15 years, I think we all agree. I mean, we talk about that even within DPSA itself. It's been a long time. 15 years, 5 years, the first project went for 5 to 8 years. 2013 we changed. And now we're already 5 years down the line in terms of the second round. And we've not even started the project, the pilot site. So we're mindful of that, and as I said, we will go back, look at it, and see how we manage it without compromising to ensure there's full efficiency and effectiveness. The cost in terms of the full implementation, remember we've done some costing, and that's the figure Honourable Member is referring to, around 4.2, 4.7 billion rands as we put on the table, is the full cost in terms of the licensing, in terms of the rollout, in terms of implementation at implementation sites, hosting costs, there's a whole range of costs linked to it. So we will provide that cost, but I think what's important here to mention is together as DPSA, National Treasury and CETA, we've done a cost-benefit analysis. If we continue using the legacy systems, the LOGOS, the BAS, and the PERSEL system going forward, remember you still have to maintain them, you still have to pay licensing there, you still have to pay hosting, you still got to do a whole lot of work as we go along with it. So we've done a cost-benefit analysis in relation to maintaining the legacy systems, which is not giving us the information we want, versus moving to a modern system that gives us all of this information at a fingertip. And that cost-benefit analysis has indicated that, yes, it will cost us upfront some money to implement the new system, but over a period of time, we will break even and end up saving money to the state going forward. And I think we need to share that information as well going forward. So it shows that the analysis is there and we are along the correct path as well. How ready we are, I don't think it's possible for us to answer that because we've not really started the work in terms of change management and readiness at the departmental level in terms of implementation. But in terms of the pilot sites, there's already been engagement at DPSA level, at National Treasury level, and I'm sure the same has happened at CIS. So from a pilot site perspective in terms of readiness, change management and preparedness has already started, and we will give some indications around that as well. The final point I just want to touch on is the macro organizing and the structure. Ma'am, you're right. I mean, there's two big projects DPSA has committed to. One is the macro organization of the state, and the president has already indicated that we need to relook the configuration of government at a national level, starting from ministries down to departments all the way down. DPSA, together with DPME and the presidency, are supporting in that work, and we are working in that regard. But the minister has also committed that we need to revisit departmental structures as well to ensure optimum utilization of personnel and efficiencies and effectiveness in terms of the structures. And that work DPSA is continuing as well. But the challenge has always been, and I wanted to make this point, in relation to this particular project, we, in terms of the IFMS 1, we've never dedicated staff to managing this project. It was always people that were doing other things that we then said, okay, this is part of your responsibility as well. And remember, part of that evaluation in 2013 indicated we need a specialized, dedicated, appropriately resourced and funded program management unit. And that has now been established in National Treasury to take us forward. I can say quite clearly now, we're still not there in terms of a fully fledged PMU. We're still capacitating the PMU. But National Treasury has to get that in order very soon. Otherwise, we're going to have the same problems down the road again. So that work is currently underway. Finally, Madam Chair and honorable members, we undertake as DPSA to coordinate, together with my colleagues from CETA and National Treasury, to provide written responses to all of these questions, although I've made some of the points through the Deputy Minister's office to make sure we meet those requirements. But let me hand over to my colleagues as well to add. Thank you.
Doc?
One second.
This is not
procedural, Mr. Governor, that when you embark on a project as huge as this one, you first put in place the person who's going to project manage it going forward, because the other person is going to be dedicated to the project all the steps of the way. Is it not procedure? If that has not happened, one would ask, how did you guys miss it?
So you're absolutely right. I mean, that should have been the starting point. But when I remember joining this project way back in 2005 when we started, there was a DDG in National Treasury, Mr. Kuhn Kruger, who was assigned the responsibility. Remember, he was the DDG responsible for transversal systems, where Pascal, Bass, all of that fell under him. And he was then given this risk. So he was still DDG. He was not moved out of that position to say, now you're the full-time project manager to run this project full-time. And I think that was one of our failings at that point. And I think we're learning from that going forward.
So each and every project, we need a project, a permanent project leader.
Depends on the size of it.
So any problem, you throw money and you create a new structure instead of dealing with the cause of it. Because also, what for me, from where I sit, I should have re-evaluated job descriptions, some of those DDGs. Because there are those ones who, honestly, they just, their work is to sign, from where I'm sitting. Thanks so much. We'll see you. Doc, it's over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think the other comments I had, implementing with the agency, getting things done. While appreciating the complexity of this thing. The question was, will the system allow integration with other systems, for example, to enable better detection of public servants who conduct business with the state? Definitely. There is already a system, which is a central supplier database, where every supplier registers. There is the e-commerce system that checks the supply chain, bids, tenders, and so on and so forth. That is connected to the central supply database. And then there'll be this one that then looks, has the data, clean data about the personnel, the HR, looks at payments in the finance module, and then looks at the actual completion of a supply chain process in the supply chain module of IFMS. Definitely. It's not just whether it's possible. I mean, it is possible. It just has to be integrated into the program. And I think the general question which was asked even some earlier last year was then what else, because this is a big system, and this is a transversal, not only in terms of how it's used, but which other systems use this system outside of itself. So we use it to manage the HR systems of government, but there are other systems outside that also use these things. So there are other integration points that have to be thought through. So definitely, that's... I mean, I wouldn't want to go... The most important thing is not just about the integration. It's building that business intelligence layer where the business question gets asked and then they get answered fairly quickly with agility. And that's what we were pointing out, that we need that capability within CETA. I mean, within the ecosystem. When you said the cloud solution. One cannot, when I say accept the healthy skepticism around, I mean, especially with the background of this project, I think Ellen Tomela is absolutely right. The biggest risk to a project this size, you start it wrong if you don't have the right people up front. You have to design the right organization, you have to resource that organization with the right people. You have to have a critical mass of the right skill sets up front. Because if you don't, you'll start making mistakes and you are going to spend a lot of time the afterwards fixing those mistakes as opposed to getting the things right. And that's why we're quite open about the gap. That's why we show that red column there. Because if you don't accept that, it's a problem. We'll never solve it, and we are going to sustain those risks in. And the key thing is to mitigate that. And I don't think we have convinced you enough because we have not given you a timeline for when the Center of Excellence will be created. And and I know, Honorable Chairperson, you have asked us to bring the time in. According to the current time, which is not satisfactory to yourself, we are not there, we are not yet at the point where we are supposed to have built a center of excellence. But on the basis of the call to bring it in, we will do so. But we will provide you, maybe, I mean, I'm processing in 1 week, I would like to review it maybe in 2 weeks, a full project plan for the establishment of the center of excellence. That probably will give a little bit more comfort on how we are going to build this capacity and de-risk this project quite significantly. I think one of the things that we did, again, different to the previous IFMS one, which failed quite a lot within CETA, is creating a function that Aposha is in charge of now, and pulling in all the other similar functions under one area of accountability. And then the two functions, the sub-functions, the G-commerce and IFMS, creating them as programs. So I've signed off now that, ordinarily what will happen here, it would be a metric structure. So you would need people who engage with departments to facilitate change management. And so we'll go and get it from our customer, that what we call our customer relationship management function. But in the meantime, they're doing other things. So now we are ring-fencing the entire program. So the program manager has complete command and control. I think the question was asked, where does the buck stop? Has complete command and control of all the resources that are employed in the project right now. And that also de-risks the project quite significantly. I think the question of why not local government, probably the department is better, will answer that better, including, I don't know, I went out a bit, whether or not, why the, who decides which provinces, and perhaps as well, not just the pilot sites. I think the other question was more about the lead sites. There was a site in Free State, for example. I think the question is, why is that not being used in the lead sites, for example? I think the department is better can answer that better. Now, the use of local companies, I think let's start it from the top there to say, yes, right now, when you talk about tier one, long time ago, you could pick probably more than five companies. There was Barn, there was JD Edwards, there was SAP, and so on and so forth. And you probably find them either in the US or in Germany. But they were not created out of a vacuum. They were created out of a specific policy drive, industrialization policy drive, and so on, and even international trade policy drive. There's been a lot of consolidation in the industry, companies being bought and so on and so forth. And the fundamental question is, why is there a strategic drive to create such a big international tier one player? Not just, for moving forward, for the software and OEM that not only can serve the local market, but also can export software under license. I think that's the question that is being asked. Where we are right now. Zita has always should have answered that call a long time ago, and that's an original mandate of Zita a long time ago. We are not there, yesterday I had a meeting with the DG of DTI and asking exactly the same question, giving him our own view of industrialization, ICT industrialization. He's completely agreed to set up a complete new task team, DTI CETA, that will later on go to National Treasury, the nominator, to answer that question. But as we speak right now, based on, I think, the specificity that was there to de-risk the project, it was an open market process, open to everybody, and I think the ones that won. However, when we don't stop there, that was a spec, that was de-risking based on lessons learned. For the local market, however, as you said earlier, there's a lot of work to be done beyond the license work. And I think maybe as the costs are given, probably there should be an isolation of non-license costs, and in particular, or non-licensed activities and activities that are localized as well, or that will be implemented through local companies. I think it's very important that number comes out quite, even in the short term. It is not Oracle's decision to decide, luckily, who we work with. There was a previous model where we would have said, Oracle, bring in your service providers. The Steercom now has changed that and said, Oracle, you'll bring the software. We'll get certain services from you just by virtue of the fact that you own the software. But the implement. So if you look at page 30, it summarizes the different work streams. Yes. So those work streams there are non-licensed work streams. Some of it, there's a participation of Oracle. But by the time we go to implementation services and most certainly support, that's an area where we use local companies. And the new model now says that we go directly. They don't make our decisions. However, they make commitments on capacitating the companies if there's a need to do so. And certainly there will be a need to do so. Jim, I think the question that you're asking is a fundamental one. It is part of, I think our minister mentioned now in the public domain at the budget speech that cabinet in the last calendar year approved a framework for repurposing of CETA. And the repurposing of CETA actually addresses that, create sustainable, integrated, agile systems that are able to respond to the evolution in society and government's responses to changes in society. And we have already been doing a lot of work to prepare ourselves for that world. For example, prior to this, we never had an application development unit that made sure that the critical applications of government, the intellectual property, is retained by the state. We now have that. And when we are asked to implement an application that answers directly to the government business problem, we ask the department not to go out on a tender, but rather to implement it such that the IP is retained by the state. And therefore, we manage and we're in full control of the life cycle of that application, to answer your question there, dear. I think the question about the departments doing their own things has been answered. Forensic is the treasury. The past failures, I mean, things quite important to accept the capability of CETA there. The method was already complex. If one looks at it after the decision had been made, granted many, many years later, and lots of monies later, tragically, the current decision to simplify the approach is even today the right decision that was taken. Capacitating upfront, organizing upfront, those things should have happened there. The companies that did not perform did not do work on a substandard basis, I think the forensic will provide us with that information and will act. And from our CETA's perspective, we have shown, I think, in the recent past, that we do act when we feel that we have been cheated by companies. And particularly if it also involves our staff members, we act with a lot of vigor there. We'll work on bringing the timelines closer. The other one about Evergreen was probably more about...
Sorry about it, because you are responding to the question to say that as you're progressing in terms of sustainability of the programs you set up, for now you're saying that you're going to be rolling this out for 30 years. My worry would be that you just mentioned that you're going to roll it out for 30 years, but you don't actually also indicate financial implication and maybe indicate as to what it means, what the money will be going into, because that also is important, and Treasury should be worried about compliance to Public Finance and Management Act, going back to your evergreens and things like that. If maybe we could actually get that answer to.
Thank you very much, Chairman, Chairperson. I think the full costing over the life cycle of this thing will be provided in more detail, answering also the other questions that were asked here. I think going from the feedback here, going into STEACOM of FMS, the question, we've been asked to sharpen the pencil a bit on terms of timelines, and we owe the committee an answer in that respect as well. The last one was about the project cost, estimated cost. What is the cost of the license over 10 years? What is the cost of customization? I think in the program here, one sees the different gates. We have a generic template, for example, that comes out of the commercial software. Then we upgrade it to generic template 1, to generic template 2, generic template 3. And I think the question is, are the costs of such customization as we learn already incorporated there, and can we isolate them? I think when we give the comprehensive cost schedule, we'll be able to answer that.
Thanks, Doc. Mr. Ngomizu, over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson.
The request is to bring the committee into confidence with what we shared with SCOBA in terms of forensic investigations relating to CETA. It is true that we did present to SCOBA. At that point in time, the Audit Committee of National Treasury were the ones as the oversight body who raised the flag that with so many allegations in the media, maybe it is about time to have a forensic investigation which the accounting authority and the minister concurred with, because forensic investigation is basically the domain of audit committees so that they provide oversight. Then we went through, as usual, tendering process, and then Deloitte got the tender. After a series of engagement with the audit committee, it came to light that the scope was actually limited. It did not give the audit committee the comfort that it needed to ensure that the investigation covered all areas. But obviously there was a misunderstanding with the Deloitte, and then both parties, with the intervention of the accounting authority, we decided to part ways, because there was quite clearly a difference in terms of what the expectation of the forensic audit was. Then we went out into the second set of procurement. So we currently have SABT, SABNT Nexus Forensics. They will be finalizing their audit by end of July. We will be presenting the same audit report to SCOPA as they requested from a follow-up to Deloitte. And we are more than happy to share the contents of the audit report or the investigation with the committee. I don't think there's anything untoward. It's part of parliament, so we will do that as soon as it is done. The other thing is, when we presented to SCOPA, the total estimated cost by then was 4 billion or 4.3 billion. That is the figure that was presented. And I think up to this point in time, this is the estimate that we still believe is achievable. However, and in a way, it also addresses the cost overruns questions that was asked. If we were to exceed this, I believe we will follow the proper process of the steering committee, escalating it up to the ministerial committee, probably up to cabinet, because we can. That is what we have included in the last cabinet memo, the 4.3. And it also included the 461 that I was referring to. At the time we were reporting to SCOPA, it was a 422, but there were some bits and pieces. It's there. We can share it with. That made me mention the 461. So we do have that complete 4.3 breakdown. We will make it available to the committee and try to write in English the 98% what we meant by that, so that we are not technical, to make it clear how does a company make money giving you 98%. They're making money actually with the maintenance and support. If you look at this contract, it's made up of two elements. You buy licenses once off, which is the 400 odd million rents, but on an annual basis you pay for maintenance, and I think that is for about a period of 20 years. So that's where they make their money. But I'm tempted not to go to try and explain it, because the more I try to explain it, it seems
No, you don't.
I will present. We will present
them the details themselves.
No, you know what the term government is, because of choice of words in some instances. They don't sit very well from our side, you know, that you don't want to react on. But if you can do what CETA has done in terms of the activity and price it, and also what has been wasted and all those things.
We actually have it, so we'll just put it in.
Which means, honorable members, Mr. Mgome Zulu did size us, because now all of a sudden he does have this information. I hope you're not, you didn't do that.
No.
Yeah, because I don't want to ask who gave you that, because it's in your system already there. But nevertheless, thanks so much.
No. But Chair, I don't think we must ever underestimate people around the table, because seeing that this is running over two departments, I, for example, might not be the bright spark on figures, but my colleague on Treasury might be, or the other way around. Or my husband might be in CA. Very easy. Here's the thing. The question I'm asking you, actually, and I understand about licenses, I understand about maintenance. IT is not on the table since today. It's been a long time. I know, even knew the people of Kojima and Danelle and whatever, all those people. The thing is this, with the maintenance included, were they the best option of everybody that tendered, the 98%? That was the question as well. But sir, don't underestimate this committee. Don't ever. This is not Treasury.
Point taken.
Don't ever.
All the other questions, Chairperson.
Go for it all the way.
The Evergreen contract, there is a project in the office of the OCPO. We know it is a national problem. This is another way of state capture. We have so many state Evergreen contracts that were...
No, not state capture, administration capture.
Administration capture, thank you.
It's like the emails and health and the purpose.
I'm learning.
$1 million.
Don't take that. So there is a specific OCP, Chief Procurement Officer project, that is dealing with how to untangle this thing, because most, even our legacy systems, they are done by the same companies over all these years. So there must be a way of coming with an operating model that gives all the role players a chance. So it is definitely a big problem. The Section 100 oversight, we will get our intergovernmental relations units to give assurance as to how they share oversight with all the relevant stakeholders. We will get that report from them. And then,
don't give us the report on the Section 100.
You were just
reading. I was making an example that when we invoke Section 100, Treasury tends to take over administratively. And that's where then, even after then, everything is normalized. We have never paid attention. What systems have you left there? Are they working? I.e. such as Limpopo. And now we're going to Northwest. So that's what I raised also with DPME Minister day before yesterday, when she apologized not attending the house, she was going to leave early yesterday. To say that's what the problem is, because also we don't also as DPME and DPSA, look at what Treasurer does on our behalf when they say we created a vacuum, for good reasons by the way, because we think Treasurer is now remedy for all diseases that we have
they
in this country.
Under Section 100 in Limpopo as well.
I'll come to you, Laura, if you want to say something. Then you can wrap up. I'll Zalal. Baba. I see a single moyo car calling high. In the calling high, as a super high. What I was a certain suit. I slowly, Baba. I'm flung enough to lay on the leg. What are you then saying? There could be a possibility of companies that have been involved since the inception of this project until now. Are there companies that were providing services until now? Is that what you're implying? Thank you.
There are companies. ITT Works is a good example.
So, yeah, there is some companies, yes. But the question now, the point I was making was on the legacy systems. First, to say, even with them, ever since you have same companies maintaining them.
I'm just raising this chair because we are very much involved. We are very much active with the issue of companies that have been there from I don't know when, the white monopoly capital, so to speak. And those issues need to be dealt with by this government. It's fine, thank you.
Let's summarize by saying that you will provide us the revised schedule, and please do report to your principals, that's what you said. I mean, fortunately, DPSA advisor is here. And you can see how frustrating these departments do to us. Do report to your principals, and do tell them that we said it very kindly that we have got business to do here. And you are going to advise them according to what we have requested you. I think that one will respect that one. One. Two is that Treasury, please come back to us within the issues that we raise. I will raise it in the House to the Minister as well. But I'll leave the other part of it. What you are going to borrow from in terms of reporting to us, Treasury, is the white CETA presented to us in terms of the template that they've used, in terms of the Excel spreadsheet that they've used. It's easier that way. It will help us. But also, we shouldn't forget that SCOPA meetings are public meetings, are live, so there's no something that you can't say. Minister Nene will feel bad that you responded this way, to say that there are other things that you're skeptical to give us as parliamentarians. And I just think it was just a mistake on that one. But also, Sita, to you now, there's this impression that not necessarily you, the other Sitas, they don't add value. So with you, we have joined this Sita less than 12 months now. How many years?
Okay.
Last time you were in communications, please do what you've been doing to the other entity so that we can say there is money value add in terms of recycling you to now to the sector. He has been performing very well, I must say. Technically speaking, there are very few of the technocrats who don't do that. And he has been doing it. I'm not praising you, let me leave it. And convince Treasury that we are worth it for you to lead this project technically. Yeah. Other than that, thank you so very much. And we hope to see you through the wires. Then the responses, we expect them in 5 working days. From today, that means on Wednesday, midday, we'll have them through Mr. Mascola's office. And we'll be very happy. The rest then, as to how then we engage moving forward, we'll deal with it in-house with DPSA and see where are other interventions that we need to do as a portfolio committee. But we mean business on this project. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, for us then, it will bring us also as well, because we won't be dealing with the minutes. Then the meeting stands adjourned. Thank you.
Somebody needs to go there.
I battle with patients to get information on Artham Clock. I've got about 10 projects on Artham Clock. They give us nothing. One day, this one for the first one, next day, another one. Then it's the old one, then it's the old one.
That I can do.
you've got the broad idea.
I can write most of the answers myself.
Let's see how we do.
No,